Hello and welcome to this new edition of Viewpoints. My name is Boris Hassan, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, Bradford's mayor calls on the provincial and federal governments to settle a 1995 claim filed by Six Nations of Grand River.
It's a national shame that this lawsuit has been ongoing for 27 years with no clear end in sight.
Close to 100 job seekers from Ukraine and elsewhere attended the Pier 21 job fair in Halifax, Nova Scotia for immigrants and refugees.
Since the beginning, especially of the crisis in Ukraine, Nova Scotians have really just figured out, how can I help? And this is just one more way that people are coming together to provide support for Ukrainian newcomers.
Nova Scotia, where a burn ban is in effect due to extremely dry weather conditions.
We'll probably leave the ban in place until we get significant rain, which is a continued amount of rain of like 20 millimeters plus.
A Sackville councillor was suspended for 2 months without pay. A GoFundMe campaign comes to his rescue.
Councillor Finney can tell you, he knows everything about it, and he can tell you if he wants to. So it's up to him, but we cannot, but he can.
And it was an historic day for the CFL and the Edmonton Elks, as the first ever Cree language broadcast of a football game in Canada took place at the Commonwealth Stadium.
I'm really excited to be representing Indigenous people in a very positive way, and just being able to inspire others by maybe helping them be motivated to learn their language.
Welcome to Viewpoints. We start off in Ontario, where Brantford City Mayor Kevin Davis called on the federal government and the province of Ontario to finally settle a lawsuit that the Six Nations of the Grand River filed in 1995. The lawsuit is to account for the Crown's handling of Six Nations property, or Haldimand Tract, both before and after Confederation. Mayor Davis presented a motion to City Council demanding that the province of Ontario amend the Municipal Act 2001. This would allow all municipalities in Ontario that so desire to implement a municipal land transfer tax to be applied to purchases on all properties in the municipality. This is something that only the City of Toronto currently does when residents purchase homes in the city. Some Brantford City councillors believe this is not the solution to the problem. More with Andrew Dow in Oshawakin, Ontario.
Brantford Mayor Kevin Davis addressed City Council members during a Committee of the Whole meeting on July 5th, where in a notice of motion, he called on the federal government and the province of Ontario to finally settle the Six Nations of the Grand River's 1995 lawsuit against the province and the federal government involving the land dispute of the Haldimand Tract. Davis made a passionate speech on the issue and outlined the notice of motion and the call for Ontario and the federal government to resume negotiations in good faith from the legal proceedings filed by the Six Nations of the Grand River back in March of 1995. The 95 lawsuit has been delayed by the province of Ontario and the federal government for 27 years.
It's a national shame that this lawsuit has been ongoing for 27 years with no clear end in sight. The last government that made a serious effort to resolve the claims outside of the court process was 14 years ago under the Harper government. Since then, not much appears to have been done. I'm told that it's proceeding to trial next year. However, the federal government continues its current litigation strategy. It won't surprise me, and I'm saying this as a lawyer, if it takes another decade or two to work through the trial and the lengthy appeal process, Court of Appeal, and the Supreme Court. Then we have a provincial government that's responsible for the Ontario land ownership system and has the legal responsibility for day-to-day consultation, accommodation with the Indigenous regarding the use of those lands. What are they doing? Well, I'm going to be diplomatic here. I could describe in other words, but I'd say that the lack of engagement on this issue is extremely disappointing to me as the mayor of the city of Brantford. Their effort to date seems primarily to download onto municipalities like ours that obligation with little support, direction, assistance, or real guidance. When they do act, they usually make the situation worse. They have perfected the art of passing the buck on this file. The result is that we're left at the forefront, the cutting edge, so to speak, of this rift.
Councillor Joshua Wall spoke on the bill being brought to council and how excited he was to be a part of the proceedings.
I'm thrilled to support this motion. It's about time something like this came to the table, and a lot of hard work went into it by a lot of great people. And I'm thankful to be here today to be a part of it. Throughout every corner of Turtle Island, which is just one traditional name for the land that many people know as North America, Indigenous people are speaking up. They are speaking loudly. They are speaking proudly. And they are taking action. And maybe more so than any other time in history, more people than ever are listening. This is not a Brantford issue. This is not an Ontario issue. This is not a Canada issue. This is a worldwide issue. And people and leaders in every country in the world are watching how our governments are communicating and negotiating with and working together with the Indigenous peoples of this land. I urge everybody to hold the people they have elected to be their leaders accountable, to speak with them, to see what they are doing, to work together towards truth and reconciliation, to work together with not only improving the lives of Indigenous people, but improving the lives of every single person who calls this country home. We have to do better. We have to be better. This council gets it. That's why we're here discussing this motion tonight. This conversation is not going away. What happened in the past happened, and we must make amends. We must make an effort to communicate. I am so thankful for this motion and for what it means. And I hope that this helps spearhead numerous motions like this throughout municipalities all over, because communication is the only way forward.
The notice of motion included a call for Ontario to amend the Municipal Act from 2001 to allow all municipalities in Ontario to implement a municipal land transfer tax to be applied to purchases on all properties in the municipality, in addition to the provincial land transfer tax, and held for and remitted to local First Nations for the benefit of Indigenous peoples to freely pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. Councillor Dan McCreary spoke against the MLTT, saying the city of Brantford should not have to be the entity doing the province of Ontario and the federal government's job for the delayed lawsuit.
In answer to the question just asked, what it means is a heck of a bill if you're going to buy a house in the city of Brantford, okay? That hasn't been touched on tonight. What we're doing is asking the province of Ontario to allow us to create a method by which buyers of new homes will be paying a lot of money more than they're paying now. That's what we're talking about tonight. That's what it means. The city of Toronto tax on $6,000 to every transaction, apparently, according to what we've looked at tonight. What about affordable housing? That was our flagship theme last year and the year before, affordable housing. This year, we seem to be on to a different flavor of the month here. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, if I'm running contrary to the good nature that's running through here tonight, but I would appreciate it if members of council would go to their constituents and ask them if they think it's reasonable that they pay another 1,000 or 2 or 3 or 6,000 like they do in the city of Toronto to acquire a house here. How many people in Brantford are put out of the housing market because there's going to be a land transfer tax? I wouldn't support that if it comes back to us, and I'm going to be consistent and I'm going to vote against it tonight because I don't believe we should be doing that. I don't believe it's right. I don't believe it's fair to people. The mayor said that the federal government has let us down. Yeah, they have. But since when is it the city of Brantford's duty to pick up the slack for every senior level of government that lets us down? We pay for our own university here going back a number of years, put $24 million into it, I think. You look at all the downloads we've suffered from province of Ontario throughout successive governments. No, I completely disagree. This can't be done on the backs of Brantford residents. It's an issue for the Crown. It should be done on the basis of federal monies and provincial monies, not our monies.
Mayor Davis's notice of motion was approved by council, and the bill will be up for final approval at the city council meeting on July 26th.
Mayor Davis's notice of motion was approved by council and passed by a majority of council members on July 26.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
No Nova Scotia businesses recently took part in a job fair for immigrants and refugees. It was held at Pier 21 in Halifax. With over 100 job seekers in attendance and businesses from different sectors and from across Nova Scotia, the job fair was a great opportunity to connect immigrants and refugees to communities, services, and job opportunities they need to build a life in Nova Scotia. The job fair hall was fully booked. Reporter Sarah Gouda was there.
My name is Jennifer Lesperance. I'm the Senior Executive Director with Immigration and Population Growth. And today we're here at a job fair for newcomers coming to Nova Scotia, and particularly for some people who have recently arrived from Ukraine.
I'm seeing a great turnout here today. Can you tell me how many businesses are here showing support for the community?
Yeah, it's a fantastic turnout. We had about 45 businesses sign up to have booths here. We filled our capacity of the room. There were still more businesses that wanted to participate. So there's even more businesses that have even just provided some job offers or are walking around the room to introduce themselves to people today.
And what kind of businesses are people finding here today?
Yeah, there's businesses in healthcare, in construction, in education and early childhood education. There's lots of other businesses from one end of the province to the other.
And why is this important for you to make this job fair for immigrants coming to Canada?
Since the beginning, especially of the crisis in Ukraine, Nova Scotians have really just figured out, how can I help? And this is just one more way that people are coming together to provide support for Ukrainian newcomers. It's really important that they know that they're welcomed in our communities, and one of the ways we can do that is showing that they'll also be welcomed in our workplaces.
We speak with some of the businesses at the fair to see what job positions need filling.
So my name is Melissa Laffin, and I'm an HR recruitment advisor with Health Association Nova Scotia. And so what we have is we have a centralized recruitment program where we're helping to support our long-term care sector. So that's our nursing homes or long-term care facilities, as well as our home support agencies. And we also help support the disability support program as well. So helping to hire community support workers there. And then also for the long-term care facilities, mainly nursing related roles. So that is CCAs, LPNs, and RNs across the province. So we partner with Department of Seniors and Long-Term Care, as well as Department of Community Services, to have a centralized program to find workers to work all across the province based on facility needs.
And what kind of jobs are you hoping to fill here today?
So there's been a few internationally educated nurses, so they can come in and work as CCAs or then bridge to get their RN licensing, as well as the community support workers, where you don't necessarily need to have an educational background or certificate or licensing to work in that role.
My name is Mark Hosking. I'm the general manager at the Best Western, Glengarry and Truro. We're here to welcome our new visitors to Canada and see if they need employment, and we're trying to fill some positions that are desperately needed in our province, as well as giving opportunities to new people to Canada.
And what kind of positions are needed at Best Western?
We have everything from entry-level positions, housekeeping, maintenance, laundry area, front desk, and we're hoping that those people can stick around and move up in our industry as well for the rest of the province. As a fellow immigrant to Canada originally, it's always good to see people coming here.
My name's Catherine. I'm the HR manager for Freehand Hospitality. So we've opened a number of restaurants down in the Queen's Mark District. We have three open right now, Drift, Bar Sophia, and Cafe Lunette, with plans of expanding to up to, I think, 11 restaurants in total. So we're hiring right now for all positions within the restaurants: servers, bartenders, hosts, server assistants, cooks, dishwashers, managers. We're expanding quite rapidly, like I was saying, so lots of opportunity to join and grow with the company.
My name's Steve Eppingham. I'm the Director of Talent Acquisition from Acadian Sea Plants. We are a seaweed company that focuses on providing, we take the seaweed and we break it down into condensed liquid or a powder, and we create animal, agriculture, human, and health products. We provide that to globally around the to other companies around the world as for whether it's food or healthcare products. And we have plants here in Nova Scotia. We're based out of Dartmouth. We have plants around Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. We also have plants in Ireland and Scotland, and we're a global, truly global company. We service 85 countries in the world. Came in looking for production workers for our plants in Cornwallis, as well as research scientists, analytical chemists, microbiologists, some skilled trades, as well as like millwrights and maintenance technicians for our South Shore plants.
My name is Brittany Colburn. I work as the Indigenous Relations Representative for the Labourers Union Local 615 on mainland Nova Scotia. So we are the Labourers Union. We hire for our signatory contractors in the construction, kind of mostly concrete formwork, high rise, anywhere you see a tower crane. It's all our members who are pouring, placing, vibrating concrete, as well as mason tending, so bricklayer helpers. So we're looking to find anyone who's interested in a career in construction. Experience is an asset, but absolutely not necessary. We have direct entry positions available as well. Our apprenticeship is entirely hours-based, so you go to work and you learn the trade on the job. So anyone who's interested can make a really great career out of it. We do offer pensions and benefits as well, so it is a great career option.
My name is Mitchell Pate. I'm the marketing coordinator for Dalhousie Food. Right now we're doing an event trying to find some local talent for customer service and food service. So we're looking for people to work in our retail locations, our dining hall, and also catering. It's great to meet all of these immigrants and refugees and to see how excited they are to be here.
A Ukrainian refugee, Zemzem, and her sister have been living in Halifax for only 1 month. Zemzem attended the fair hoping to find a job working at a restaurant.
Zemzem Asafi.
And what are you doing here today?
I'm looking for a job.
Oh, and where are you from?
From Ukraine.
Are you from Ukraine? And how long have you been in Halifax for?
1 month.
And what kind of jobs are you looking for?
In restaurant service.
Services.
So my name is Shreya Javeri, and I'm here in the job fair today to look for a good opportunity in my own field, which is in human resources and management. And this job fair is amazing. I'm enjoying it. There are so many people and so many opportunities I'm looking at right now. So hopefully soon I'll get it. It's been just 3 months in Canada to me. So yeah, it's new. I'm from India.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, BC, and you are listening to Viewpoints.
A burn ban is in effect across Nova Scotia. Extreme weather and dry conditions forced a decision made by the Nova Scotia Department of Natural Resources and Renewables. The combination of high temperatures, strong winds, added to the dry forest floors, prompted the ban. The province says it could leave the ban in place until it gets more than 20 millimeters of rain. The situation is critical in many Canadian provinces. As of July 20, the Canadian National Fire Database reports that 195 fires were burning out of control across the country. Priority fires were located in British Columbia, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. More with Ed Alberson in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
It appears a burn ban in place across Nova Scotia will remain in effect for the near future. According to a spokesperson from the Department of Natural Resources and Renewables, drought-like conditions over the past 2 weeks have left the forest floor extremely dry. Wildfire Prevention Officer Kara McCurdy says due to a combination of high temperatures and wind and low humidity, the smallest spark could set off a forest fire.
Don't have any fires, period. You know, whether it be campfire or brush burning. Being careful where you place anything hot, like if you're welding, don't weld in dry vegetation. If you're running an all-terrain vehicle, that you make sure to clear the exhaust off frequently, because stuff accumulates around that and can get hot and drop. Even camping, you know, if you're walking in the woods, don't discard any cigarettes, don't play with matches or lighters.
Environment Canada has issued an extreme heat warning for Nova Scotia and is forecasting temperatures into the high 20s until next week. There's a chance of showers over that time. However, McCurdy says they likely won't be enough to lower the fire hazard.
But it's not enough to really impact wetting the fuels down in the forest, right? So we'll probably leave the ban in place until we get significant rain, which is a continued amount of rain of like 20 millimeters plus.
McCurdy says a few days of steady rain is key to preventing forest fires.
A lot of the rain that comes from thunder cells will just quickly run off. I mean, the ground's so hard now from being dry for so long that it's just going to just drain right off really quick.
McCurdy says there have been 7 new forest fires of varying sizes across Nova Scotia over the past week. Several of those are the result of campfires being left unattended or from people clearing their properties by burning the brush. Crews are working to get a 1 hectare fire in Cumberland County under control now. She says people need to pay attention to the burn ban to safeguard the forests, their property, fire crews, and themselves against fire. Burn restrictions are updated on the NovaScotia.ca BurnSafe webpage every day at 2 p.m. I'm Ed Halverson.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoint.
It was a historic day for the CFL and the Edmonton Elks as the first ever Cree language broadcast of a football game in Canada took place on July 22nd at the Commonwealth Stadium. Wayne Jackson, Edwin Thomas, and Darcy Houle made up the broadcast team covering the game in Cree language, and Kia Bruno was given the honor of singing the national anthem in both the Cree language and in English. More on this with Danielle Barker-Tremblay in Edmonton, Alberta.
For the first time in both CFL and the Edmonton Elks history, Indigenous people were celebrated at the Commonwealth Stadium. Kaya Bruno, who had the honor of singing the national anthem in both the Cree language and English, says she feels excited to represent Indigenous people in a positive way.
I'm really excited to be representing Indigenous people in a very positive way and just being able to inspire others by maybe helping them be motivated to learn their language, so to help with the revitalization of the Cree language and other Indigenous languages as well.
Wacy Rabbit, assistant coach from the Saskatoon Blades, was asked to do the official coin toss for the game. Rabbit says that he felt a little nervous, along with saying that it was a huge honor to be a part of the event.
I'm not going to lie, I was a little nervous. I didn't want to screw it up. They said an elderly woman did it the game before, so I had some big shoes to fill, but it was fun. It's an honor, full of pride. My wife's the in-game host, so, you know, she does a lot for the community and our people, and, you know, this is one of her things, and it's Treaty 6 is our home, so I'm just full of pride here.
I'm Daniel Barker-Tremblay.
To New Brunswick now, where Sackville Town Councillor Bruce Finney was suspended without pay for a period of 2 months, and a GoFundMe campaign was immediately launched to cover lost wages. It is still not clear why Town Council suspended Finney, as he declined to comment the decision. The Town Council voted to sanction Finney earlier this month over code of conduct violations. But meanwhile, the fundraiser launched by citizen and longtime friend Wendy Alder collected more than $1,400. She says that in the normal workplace, you couldn't suspend somebody and then still expect them to work, which is exactly what the Town Council has done. Town Council hasn't disclosed the nature of the code of conduct violations or identity of the complainant, but our Sackville journalist David Gordon-Kosh attempted to piece together the story in this report.
Earlier this month, Sackville Town Council voted to sanction Councillor Bruce Finney, saying he had breached the code of conduct for members of council. Councillors accepted recommendations from an investigator that included suspending his pay for 2 months. Councillor Finney was away on vacation at the time of that council meeting. Here's Councillor Michael Tower introducing the motion at the June 12th meeting.
Council hereby accepts the recommendation of the independent investigator and imposes the following sanctions on Councillor Bruce Finney. Suspension of remuneration paid to Councillor Finney for a period of 2 months. That Councillor Finney take one-on-one coaching to discuss effective communication strategies, and that Councillor Finney's travel and representation on behalf of Council be suspended for the remainder of his current term in office.
The nature of the complaint and the identity of the complainant haven't been released. Local independent journalist Bruce Wark asked for information about why Finney was sanctioned during the meeting. Here's Deputy Mayor Andrew Black's response at Town Council.
Well, it's an HR matter, so we can't get into the details of that. But as the motion stated, we've accepted the recommendations of the independent report.
Is that independent report available?
No.
After the reporter pressed councillors over the lack of transparency, Councillor Bill Evans said they were bound by law.
In the motion, it does indicate which sections of the code he violated.
so you can get an idea of what it was. I feel your pain, but we are constrained by the law. Councillor Finney can tell you, he knows everything about it, and he can tell you if he wants to. So if it's up to him, but we cannot, but he can.
CHMA reached Councillor Finney by phone on Thursday, but he declined to go into detail about the situation at that time. However, Bruce Wark managed to interview Councillor Finney about the complaints. Finney said the sanctions stem from remarks that he had made on two occasions back in February, according to an article published on worktimes.com. Here's the first one. Councillor Finney is speaking at a council meeting on February 14th during a discussion about hiring practices in this clip.
I'll be voting against this hiring policy because I feel that we're still using the same method we've been using for some time. And in the meantime, during that time, we've had a number of, it's to me what I would call unfair hiring practice. That's because of the fact that some of the people actually even in town feel the same way, where family members are being hired. And then also, to me, there was one that I felt was a conflict of interest. So because of that, I think actually we should engage with a human resource management expert to turn around and help with the hiring.
Later in February, during a meeting on municipal reform, Councillor Finney stated that he doesn't believe students should be able to vote in elections in Sackville. The sanctions mean that Finney will lose 2 months of pay. That decision didn't sit well with Wendy Alder. She's a former Sackville resident who now lives in Bayfield near Cape Tormentine. After learning about the sanctions, she launched a GoFundMe campaign to compensate the councillor for $1,300 in lost salary.
I don't agree with the sanction. I don't know the rules, like as far as, you know, how that goes. But I know, for example, in the, you know, normal workplace, you couldn't suspend somebody and then still expect them to work. So I don't agree with that. I also don't agree that his peers can vote on that. But again, I don't know how that really works in politics. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I've heard. I watch the council meetings pretty religiously, and there's a lot of stuff that I've heard other councillors say that, you know, you just kind of drop your jaw. And, you know, what Bruce said, I don't think is anywhere near what some of the other stuff that I've heard. I just don't think it's fair.
And that was the voice of Wendy Alder, who launched a GoFundMe to support Councillor Bruce Finney after he was sanctioned by Sackville Town Council this month. Mayor Sean Michaud was unavailable for comment, and Deputy Mayor Andrew Black declined to comment for this story. As for Finney, he told CHMA on Thursday he'd just learned about the fundraising campaign after returning from Alberta. The sanctions against Councillor Finney are the latest in a series of reprimands against the councillor for code of conduct violations. Finney himself voted against the code of conduct when it was introduced in 2020, saying it was an attempt to muzzle town councillors.
So this is what completes this edition of Viewpoints. Thanks to our reporters, Sarah Gouda, David Barker-Tremley, Andrew Dow, Ed Alverson, and David Gordon-Kosh, National Coordinator Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Tune in to all our stories on canada-info.ca. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassagne. Happy to have you with us. See you soon.